I'm a research scientist at the University of Washington and in the Department of Astronomy. And what I want to do here is quickly just show you the kind of things we do with C++. So this is from a C++ program. It's a simulation of a protoplanetary disk. So right in the center, there's a star. And there's this gas spinning around it. And we kind of try to see how planets form. So something like this happened a few billion years ago with the solar system. And the bright spots are where there's more matter. So you can kind of see finally, you know, it starts off sort of homogeneous and it becomes planets are being formed as time goes on. So these are kind of some of the things that we do with C++. And what I would like to talk today is about multidimensional arrays, which are kind of critical to that type of simulations that we do. And one of the things, so we use C++ because it's easy to learn and easy to use. But actually, it's because it's resource constrained. Yeah, so that's one of the use cases for C++. If you are resource constrained, and you are concerned about time and memory and so on, so then the language to use is essentially Fortran, C, or C++. As I tell my students, the more expensive the computer that you're running your code on, the older is the language which they use on it. So the most expensive computers, tend to run C++ or Fortran. This is sort of a generic thing because time is critical and memory is critical and so on. And so usually I'm climbing the mountain on the left-hand side, but sometimes I have to climb the mountain on the right-hand side. And, I don't know if the book authors choose these front covers or the publishers choose it, but they are appropriate to the topic that these books contain. Okay, so multidimensional arrays and C++. So what's the big deal? Now, in a lot of systems programming, you don't really see multidimensional arrays, like one dimension is big enough. And so C and C++ have tended to kind of focus on that. And in physics and applied math and many of the scientific computing field, it's very common to have multidimensional arrays. Two and three are very common, and you even have higher ones. We are in three space dimensions and one time dimension. So things like this, like the temperature field at a point, you have a grid of point, and then you have the temperature at each point. A spin model on a 3D lattice. In fluid dynamics, three components of the velocity at a point in a fluid. So these are very common. And so passing multidimensional arrays to functions is very critical for computational physics, applied math, and scientific computing in general. And in linear algebra, a matrix is a two-dimensional array, and a matrix inversion function, which needs to know each of the size of the dimensions, would be at compile time, would be of limited use. Now, other languages have supported this feature for decades. So it's not exactly, some kind of brand new cutting-edge feature. So C99, Java, C#, so even the general-purpose languages support this for over 15 years. And scientific programming languages like Fortran, MATLAB, and R, they have supported this, obviously, for decades. Like Fortran has supported this for, 50 years. So there's no real, unknown aspects of this feature. But C++ is the only major programming language which does not support this feature. And the absence of this feature increases the barrier to moving from C, et cetera, to C++. And for small teams and grad students, it limits their usage of C++. Because, when they're just beginning to program, they would like this basic feature if they're doing scientific computing. Now, this does not mean that C++ is not used in scientific computing. In fact, it's used in a lot of places. Usually, it's the very big organizations like CERN, Jet Propulsion Lab, LSST, Large Scale Synoptic Telescope. They have a big group here at the University of Washington. LMB, the Lab for Molecular Biology in Cambridge, which is, I don't know if you know about it, but it's sort of called like the Nobel Prize Factory. They've got like dozens of them. And so these very large organizations tend to use C++. And if C++ is used for scientific computing, one of the first tasks is to make a class for multidimensional arrays. And so if you're one of these really big organizations, like if you're really big, like CERN or JPL, you can actually get Dr. Straustrup himself to help you out with your C++. And, you know, he's actively involved with these really big organizations. And if you're doing something which is really small scale, then maybe you don't need, you know, you don't have the kind of resource constraints of C++. But if you're somewhere in the middle, kind of like, you know, as the as often said, like the middle class, you know. So if you're in that regime, then you kind of like, you know, would like certain more, it would be preferable to have certain features, sort of which are already inbuilt in the language so that you can not have to create your own multidimensional array class. So all these organizations like LSST code for astronomy, Reliant code for cryo-electron microscopy, they make their own multidimensional array classes. And it's sort of reinventing the wheel over and over again. So since I'm from the astronomy department, here's a picture of a telescope under construction in Chile. And you know, you can get the size of the whole building and the telescope from the size of the pickup truck. So that gives you a scale of what it's all about. And if we talk about the very big, we should talk about the very little. And this is something from cryo-electron microscopy, where they use two-dimensional images of two-dimensional electron microscope images from different directions to reconstruct the structure of the molecule or the virus. And so the output of all these projects is a huge amount of data, which is then processed with C++. So it's being used in a lot of fields. So what exactly is our concern here? The point is that this code is valid C99, but it's not valid C++. So essentially, if you have this array in red being passed to a function, in C++, you need to know N and M at compile time. And in C, you don't need to do that. And certainly in the other languages, you don't need to do that. This is sort of the, you know, limitation which essentially ensures that the first time you start using C++ for scientific computing, you need to make your own multidimensional array class, or you need to, like, you know, get some non-standard library from somewhere. Now this is valid C99 and C++. So if you can leave the first dimension of the array be unknown at compile time, but the second and all the later dimensions have to be known at compile time, and that sort of is, you know, a bit problematic if you're constrained all the time. So that code is correct only if m is equal to 3. So you need like a different code each time you have a different m. Now C has this feature called variable length arrays. And C variable length arrays, this is from C99. So C variable length arrays are not allowed by a compiler for C++, even though the same compiler supports them for C, which is kind of, you know, so they're actively, the compiler says, no, if you have a .cpp file, I'm not going to allow you to do this, even though I know how to do this. But if your file is .cpp, you know, no can do. And, you know, GCC, Clang, ICC, so these are all the compilers, you know. I mean, so it's basically really enforced. Yeah, they're being really strict about it. They can give you different types of extensions, but, you know, they're not going to allow you to use VLA, even though they have the ability to allow you to do that. Now, C variable length arrays are more general than needed for just merely passing multidimensional arrays to functions. Like, this is valid C99, but not valid C++. And, you know, what you're doing is essentially you're doing a, you know, you can call it a malloc or a new within that function. So you just got N and M from the as function parameters, but inside it you're allocating space. And this actually is... you know, the argument against VLA, that if N and M are large enough, then you can, you know, that code can crash without throwing exception or returning error code, etc. And this is one of the main arguments, but, you know, that argument does not hold just for passing arrays to functions, because that memory has been allocated somewhere else. So as an aside, if a future C++ standard allowed the above subset of VLA, it would really reduce the barrier in moving from other languages like C to C++. So how about the C++ standard library? Now, this is a direct quote from the Boost multi-array manual. And so they say there's lots of generic containers in the standard library, but no multidimensional array type. And then they say you can use standard vector, double, etc. But they themselves say that the resulting interface is unwieldy and the memory overhead is quite high. So, lots of non-standard libraries have been made to tackle this issue. Certainly, all these various projects I talked to you about, they have their own multidimensional array classes, which are tightly knit with their own code. And these are some of the publicly available standard libraries, which is Armadillo, Eigen, Blitz++, Boost.multiarray. So they have lots of features, very large, very complex. They are good for linear algebra, matrix algebra, two-dimensional things. In many cases, they're really good. They're optimized for that. So this library is from Australia, and it has, its focus is only on 2D arrays and 3D arrays, which is kind of limiting many times. And this one focuses only on 2D arrays. This is from France, and it's also basically focused on linear algebra. So it's very strongly focused on linear algebra, eigenvalue finding, and things like that. This one is interesting. It's Blitz++, and it is very large and very complex. In fact, it has a 100-page manual, and up to 11 dimensions are supported, which is fine for most physics and applied math and scientific computing applications, but it's really large. It allows you to, we'll come to it later, but there's a row major and a column major way of addressing these arrays. And this one allows you to do all the n factorial different ways you can access it. So it has a huge amount of generality. If you just want a basic multidimensional array class, it's a bit too large. And then there's boost.multiarray, which is actually inspired by Blitz++. So it also has lots of features. And it has a relatively, so it has all the, aspects of Blitz++, but it has a very, it also has a complicated syntax. So, at least from a scientific computing point of view compared to other languages. So if you look at this code here, there are already three classes, three types of objects that you need. You need the array itself, the first type def, then you need index, and then you need extents. And so even though the code, the triple loop there looks kind of familiar, it's the I, J, K are not, the traditional integers, but they're really index objects of the index class. And so the drawbacks of the existing libraries for a lot of code in scientific computing is that they're very large and complex. So, you need to, your code becomes dependent on a large non-standard library with 100-page manuals and so on. And so the usage of the library is limited to those who are willing to install it and learn from it. And in some cases, the libraries may not be actively maintained, but they are so complicated that you'd have to spend a lot of time if you really wanted to maintain them yourself. So I wrote a library based on what is available in, commonly available in lots of these other languages like C and Fortran and so on. And the idea was to have a minimal, minimalistic library. So, it should have at least the features what native arrays have in other languages. And it should fill the gap between C++ arrays, which are very, very limited, and, these huge, large libraries. And it should be convenient to include with applications. The code should be, readable code, so the user can convince himself that it's correct. Like the previous speaker pointed out, he looked at some header files, and it looks very complicated, even if they're doing ordinary things. And so, if you're going to use that type of code, it's a bit problematic if you have to actually debug anything. And the efficiency should be similar to native arrays in C++. And it should be easy to debug array index out of bounds because that is a very common problem when we know from experience. So the choices are that it should be easy to declare and use the array. You should not have to look at a manual. I mean, you don't need to look at a manual in these other languages. And it should be convenient to include, so a single header file should be enough. It should be efficient because, you know, if it's not efficient, it's not going to be able to compete on those, enormous machines, 10,000 core machines. It's, as an aside, like, you know, all these machines use huge amount of power. And so if you're going to do a computation which is going to use a lot of power, you want it to be efficient. So it's not just a time issue, it's a power issue. You'd like compile time option to turn on array bounds checking and a compile time option for C order or Fortran order. So these are the design choices that I made. So I'd like to prohibit the copy constructor and assignment operator. So the semantics are similar to C++ native arrays. And this, removes the problem of people passing arrays, like 1,000 by 1,000 or 1,000,000 by 1,000,000 array, and complaining it's slow. So you must pass multidimensional arrays by reference. There's a member function at for subscripting instead of overloading the subscripting operator. If array bounds checking is on, you have a segmentation fault on error, and then you can find the problematic line in your debugger. So it makes it easy to debug. And there's no default constructor since multidimensional array without size specified for each dimension has no meaning. So if you really need an array of arrays, you should use a higher dimensional array and not, complicate things. And then there's no virtual member function since class is not designed for inheritance. It's supposed to be like used as is. You can use you can use composition. If you want to use the array and do some, other fancy tricks, put that in your class and then do what you want. The maximum number of dimension is 7, essentially because higher dimension arrays are extremely rare. The memory usage increases very rapidly. So a lot of these other array classes, some of them, where they allow you to have arbitrary number of dimensions, it's really only of theoretical importance because beyond a few dimensions, your memory usage increases rapidly. But it's easy to modify the code if you want to have array 8D, etc. This is the user manual. Really, it could be put on one page, but I'm using a big font. And, you declare array 2D double, the sizes. You use it by b.at 3,4 is 3.14. And you can send it into a function just by reference. And it's prohibited. There's no copy constructor. So you're not going to make, the users, even if they're new, they're not going to make a mistake of, using the copy constructor here. So... And you have two options at compile time, a bounce check, which you can, so when you're debugging and testing your program, it'll help you to find your bugs. And you can use the Fortran order or the C order. So I like to call them Fortran order, which is first index moves, changes fastest, and the C order, where the last index changes most rapidly. The official names are column major and row major. And so here is the same code using this, the Orca Array library. And you can see it's very simple. So even if you don't have a manual handy, you can go home and write it right away. You don't need to think, what does this mean? And did I get all my classes right, etc. It's exactly the same way you would write in a traditional array. And so performance. So the correct answer to every performance question is it depends. And it depends on a lot of things, CPU, cache size, memory, disk, compiler, etc. And so a lot of the big O stuff that you read, you should, check it out on your code because the big O stuff is asymptotic and you may not be in the asymptotic regime. So actually running the code many times is the only reliable way of estimating performance. And what I found is that it's within few percent of the native array performance. There's a caveat that the number of elements must be large enough, and you must be doing enough computations. So if you have very small arrays and you don't do any computations at all, then the native arrays have advantage because the compiler understands all about native arrays, and you're not doing dynamic memory allocation and so on. So this is the things which I told you. You prohibit the copy constructor assignment operator. You check that the sizes are not negative. A few basic functions to give you the sizes. You do array bounds check. you have a Fortran order or a C order. And this is just to point out, so if you have like seven dimensions or, you know, essentially you access the array by a function like this. So it's basically a function from multi, you know, from x1, x2, so on till x7, and you need to map it to one value. And these Fs or the Cs, the big uppercase C and the uppercase F, are constructed at the time when you're constructing the array. They are functions of the size of the array. So to conclude, the Orca Array library for multidimensional arrays is convenient to use and to include. The user manual is a few lines only, so you don't need to spend a lot of time. You can, you know, look at the code yourself and convince yourself it's okay for your needs. It has compile time options for array bounds checking and for C order or Fortran order, and it has good performance. So it's available on GitHub. And to conclude, I'd like to say questions. And this is my picture of my favorite Orca array. It's a two-dimensional Orca array. So it's probably not going to perform that well, but it's still kind of neat. So questions? Yeah. So I've thought a bit about it, and like, you know, there seem to be so many options. I would think it would be like, I have to still go and put it up there, like, you know, but I would go with, my friends tell me like BST is good essentially, because, you know, so yeah, so if you want to use it either in your, you know, proprietary code or in your, you know, open source code, it's all fine with me, kind of, you know. I mean, the main reason to do this, so, you know, I've been waiting for lots of these standards to come and go, and I've been hoping one day we would have a standard multidimensional array, but it doesn't look like it's happening anytime soon. And so I thought I had to do something about it myself. So, you know, so I'm more than happy anybody uses it for proprietary code or for, you know, open source code, et cetera.
So you've not been tracking the work on the standards for this kind of stuff?
I looked at the array view. And, you know, that doesn't seem to own its own memory. Yeah, it seems to be like a wrapping on top of. So if you have an array somewhere and a pointer somewhere, you can wrap it within that. But they don't seem to be, you know, doing like a real multidimensional array which owns its own storage and where you don't need to muck around with pointers. Yeah, so it's kind of like here, you don't need to use any pointers at all.
Well, here you're passing it all by reference.
That's right, yeah.
And so that, why is that not like an array view?
No, because ArrayView does not own its memory. Yeah, like the ArrayView is kind of like, you know, you have a pointer from somewhere which has its memory, and then you, you know, construct the ArrayView, giving it that pointer and some, you know, space, how much elements you have, say. Here, it's totally standalone. Yeah. So, and I'm passing it by reference. So, you know, the compiler may be using pointers and so on. But if you look at the code, it's, the code itself is very simple. Yeah. And there is, yeah, so I think the point is that from the user point of view, and that's one of my target audience, like, yeah, you know, users who are new to C++, and they can use this without having too much knowledge, and it's difficult to misuse it. So you can't, like, you know, end up passing a whole array and having copy semantics, kind of. So
why don't you tell the standards to do that?
Well, I did talk to Dr. Straustrup himself, in fact, you know. I mean, I call him Dr. Straustrup because people here seem to call him Bjarne, but that seems like calling my school teacher, you know, by first name. But
and talking to individuals on the committee is not the same as writing a paper and submitting.
Okay, so maybe I should look into that, you know. I'll try to look into the process for that. And he told me to look at the, you know, ArrayView thing. And I did look at what's on the web and Neil McIntosh's talk. But it didn't seem to be, like, you know, addressing this particular need.
So. It's still a two-step process. You have to create it, right? Yeah. Then you create it on the ArrayView. But what's useful is one-step process.
Yeah, I won't dispute that. All I'm saying is that that needs to be said in a way that the committee actually can get a handle on, and things don't happen without papers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, and I think one of the things is, as I pointed out, that, for example, this, you know, limit on, say, 7 or 15 or whatever, you know. So I find a lot of template code wants to be the most general ever. But in practice, you know, you need to say that if, you know, there are limitations on machines in today and in the next 30 years, yeah? And you know, if your memory is, if something n is somewhere, you know, occurring in exponential function, you don't need to go to very large n. You know, it's like the whole thing with Fibonacci sequence people do, like, any, you know, you don't really need to calculate it. You calculate it once and you're done, because, you know, the amount of numbers that you can calculate is so small. So that type of practical thing. Yeah?
Do you have any guarantees with regards to concurrency?
Like, pardon?
Is it a use case of yours to touch one of these things from multiple threads, either it's both threads reading or one writing?
No, that is not a use case in my situation. But, you know, these type of things could be used in MPI programs and so on, where you just, you know, you're separate. So, yeah, shared nothing, kind of. So.
Oh, so the code that you write is message passing concurrency, thread concurrency.
You could use it. I have not used it, but what I'm saying is it's shared nothing. So it's not a thread concurrent type of thing. You know, there's no locking here. There's no tracking of, you know. And it's all a private. Memory is private, yeah? So you'd have to really do some trickery to, you know, access it. Yeah. Okay. Okay, yeah, so I think, as you suggested, and maybe I'll talk with you afterwards to find out more about this process. Like, you know, so I'm from the astronomy department, yeah, so it's like I'm not familiar with a lot of these processes. I also wish the same thing, actually.
Very, very nice, because it's not limited to the high number of dimensions, and also your way in the accuracy array, you do F7 times, F6 times, F5 times, where a boost multi array will, you know, at compile time generate this code. So if you give it a three-dimensional array and you set the temple parameter to 3, it will actually generate the multiplication only for those 3 indices. So, I mean, have you done some performance comparisons between boost multi array and
Not with Boost. You know, the performance comparisons I did with were with you know, the native array. So you're talking about runtime performance or compilation?
No, runtime. I mean, yeah, I think Boost multi array is very bad compilation.
Yeah. So I think that's one of my concerns. Yeah. Like, so, you know, like, so there are two things. So one is the compile time performance. You know, if this thing is going to take more compile time than the scientist's own code, you know, he's not going to use it. But I think the other is the runtime performance. So I think I compared it with the native arrays, and it's doing fine there. So if the boost is similar performance to native arrays, then it would be similar performance in practice. And I think that, regarding the comparison, it's true that, you know, boost and multi-array and Blitz++ do a million things more. But a lot of scientific code, so if the code needs all those functionality, it's great. But a lot of code does not necessarily need all that functionality. You know, there's a lot of code being written in C and Fortran and so on, and they're doing fine without a lot of that extra functionality. So that's really the, you know, focus of this thing. So, yeah, that was what decided my, you know, design decisions and sort of overall philosophy.
Have you done any work on sparse matrices?
Yeah, I have done a bit of it. So the question is, have I done any work on sparse matrices? So I have done a bit of it for my own use, but I haven't, you know, reached a stage where I could sort of, you know, make it public yet. But I have looked into that, because that's the other thing we have, and that occurs in things like machine learning and so on. We applied machine learning to one of our astronomy problems, and there you can have a lot of sparse matrices, you know, so very high dimensions, but really most of them are, you know, empty. Most of the elements are empty, really. And so I've done a bit there, but it's not ready yet.
I have also remarked that concerning your row-column major macros. So it was a macro, right?
It's not a macro. They're all functions. But they're inline because they're, you know, very small.
No,
and
but if you want
let's go to the... Yeah, the if def is between, yeah, either you go Fortran order or CO.
You have to choose basically before you include your header, you have to choose for that, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I won't make that a policy for it, yes. So you can really
just
choose.
Just make it a
web calls.
Yeah, yeah. So
much better and much more C++.
Because, I mean, for instance, I mean, this is very scientific code. You usually have like it's like n times n or something. But for instance, in audio, we also have, I was always looking for something similar. There you have something like interleaved versus non-interleaved. So you have like a two stereo channel, which is basically the same thing. And either you have the two channels behind each other or they're interleaved. It's the same problem, like row versus color major. But then you have like interfaces. Some of these take this interleaved, others are non-interleaved. And then I have to like copy from one to the other. And then I need both versions in the same code.
Oh, I see.
I don't want to switch that one parameter once, and then it's like hard-coded. So that's
I'll look into that policy.
And another remark concerning the add, so we call it add. So this is a little confusing maybe if you know the vector, because the vector add does always bound checks, even if debug is, so even at
it's
full performance thing. So I would rather make like a parent operator and add as the bound checking.
Why did you decide not to use
I just feel like this, you know, code is simpler. Like, you know, whether you use the, you know, the, you know, these type brackets or the square brackets, you know, I think this just seems simpler. But I see your point that people may assume there's bounce check anyway. Yeah,
yeah. Well, but the other operator is the operator is standard for arrays. It's very easy for
the bracket operator only works for one argument, not for more.
Yeah, he's talking about the other one, like, you know, with the function type thing. Yeah. Yeah, I can look a bit into that. Like,
so you can make bracket operator with commas if you overload the comma operator.
But you cannot overload the comma for fields and types. You cannot overload comma for integers, because then you would write something like 2,3, and that's not possible, unfortunately. Then you would need to have like a starting type, custom type that starts the thing, like, and then this type, comma, and so on.
But you could build the bracket sequence.
Yeah, then you return a proxy, and then it gets more complicated again. So I think that's
presumably that would compile away. But
You would hope that it compiled away. Yeah.
Well, why use something simple?
But at least the add thing is like confusing, because it looks like.
Yeah, I think at least I should probably make it more. You know, in the 2-page manual, it should be written probably that, you know, the default is basically to not check. And basically, since it's, you know, the header is readable, it's right at the top, the choice between, you know, checking and not checking and Fortran or not. So I'm hoping if people use it anywhere, they would at least open it up and look at the first few lines, and it would be right there. So,
I find it very surprising that you call it Fortran, which is very programming. I mean, as a programmer, I went, of course, Fortran, that's fine. But I thought your target audience was mostly people that are, you know, maybe students or people that are in math. And so therefore, I found it surprising that that was the choice.
Yeah, it's mostly because it's easier than remembering row major and, you know, column major. You know, it's always tricky to remember what it really means. But I think Fortran is sort of easy to remember. Then, you know, mnemonic for it is like, you know, Fortran is first, yeah? So, like, you know, first index varies fastest. And in C, you know, it's like an odometer, so the last index varies fastest. So that's kind of like just to make it easy to remember. You're right that some of the target audience, it might be new to them, but I should probably again make a note of that. That so, if sometimes people are porting code from Fortran or C, and they need to probably know the ordering. You know, if they're porting some code, for example.
It's nice to have a name that suggests what it is. And so I think row major or column major is a good way to.
Plus, most of the APIs, the graphic APIs, for example, linear algebra, they refer to row major and column major.
Right, but if it's 2D, it's fine. But if you have like, you know, 7Ds, then, you know, because what it's saying is the last index or the first, and the first one maybe agree is the row, but do we agree the last one is the column or the second one is the column? If you have a 7-dimensional array. So I think that was part of it. Like, you know, so the real interesting case here is 3, 4, 5 dimensions. Yeah.
So in the add function, the row, the capital dimension, and the row would always come first, the row index, no matter which memory layout you choose.
Yeah, it's just the formula being used, for the calculation. is different, you know. So basically based on what approach you're using, you know. So it's just a matter of the way you are doing the, you know, multiplications and additions. And you know, it gets slightly more complicated if you have, say, seven dimensions. So all these F, big F, and big C's are defined at the when you're constructing this array. So the array uses memory equal to the memory you're using and a little bit of more to, you know, save these things, calculate and save them once. But usually the aim here is for larger arrays, yeah, like, you know, which is not common, which is common in scientific computing, like, you know, 100 by 100 or 1,000 by 1,000 or million by million. Okay, if then...
One last comment also with comparison to this multi array is that what's really nice about this multi array is you access, you know, one index, you say like array and then fract pi, you turn a multi array with one dimension smaller.
Right.
This is something that Fortran does as well, so you can have subviews of your matrix, like in Fortran that goes into NAND, you can have subview of your multi array passed on. And like, so like somehow think, I mean, I like, but it's very, very hard to compute against this multi-array, especially for scientific people who come from Fortran. Because multi-array has many, many these things that you expect from Fortran to have that in there.
Yeah, so I agree with that. Like, you know, it's the idea here is to make it easy to use so that in a lot of use cases, so I think if the use case is doing something which it needs all the features in Boost multi-array, I think that's probably, you know, appropriate, but a lot of use cases don't need all that, you know, extra stuff, and so for that this works out fine. I guess one last question, and
just a curious question: like, your target audience, how much do they care about speed and things?
Well, the way it works is generally in scientific computing, at the beginning when they're writing, maybe they don't care, you know,
yeah,
that much, but gradually when they go to the supercomputer and run it over there, then they start caring when they need, like, you know, thousands of cores. So my opinion always has been, and I try to convince them that, you know, if you go with these statically compiled languages, you know, you don't need to change your code 6 months later in any dramatic way. Maybe you need to fiddle a little bit. Because some of them, you know, lack, say, features like a convenient multidimensional array, sometimes they, you know, start using some other languages, and then 6 months later, when they find that it's not enough, you know, they can't, it's not running fast enough, then they need to kind of, you know, think what to do.
Yeah, I was just thinking of, like, you know, you've got all these multiplies and sums, and I don't know, maybe they get washed out by the compilers.
Yeah, that depends, because I think many cases the kind of index manipulation in scientific code is not necessarily just, you know, AI is equal to BI type of thing. Yeah, they'll be like, you know, AI is equal to the average of all the different, you know, BIs around and so on. Yeah, so it gets complicated. So I'm not so concerned about, you know, like, it seems unlikely the compiler can anticipate all the possible, you know, things people do. Okay, I guess the session is over. Thanks a lot for...